So the favorite part, how to hire the contractors.
The right contractors.
Yeah, the right contractors. So this is not set in stone. This keeps changing as people keep changing, as the market changes. When the market is bad, you find really good quality. When the market is good, everybody's a contractor. So ever since 2008, this is something that we saw a lot that affected our business personally, was after 2008, everybody that was a sheetrocker became a GC. Everybody that was a wood guy became a GC. Everybody became a GC, right? Because they needed work. So usually if you're in the construction space, you can kind of figure out how to do different things. So you're like, yeah, I can install some cabinets or I can do that. But, you know, you really can't. So that's what happened. So there's always, they say, you know, you have three options, good, fast, and cheap. And they always say, pick two. In a really good market, pick one. Maybe you get lucky and get two. Yeah. You know, but yeah. But usually it's just one. So you want to determine that by the type of flip that you're doing. If you're doing a high-end flip, good is what's going to be important. If you're using expensive money, let's say hard money, maybe you want speed. Right? And then you want to babysit them a little more so they do a better quality. So, I mean, you got to keep that in mind when you're hiring a contractor. What is the end goal with this property? What do you need? Do you need that, you know, the precise details to be perfect? Because if not, it's not going to sell. Or do you need it to be done quick because it's, you know, maybe a rental or something like that? Or do you need it to be really cheap? You know, which cheap doesn't always mean fast. Sometimes cheap is still really, really slow. So, you know, you want to keep those things in mind. This has been, the reason I put every contractor has 30 years of experience is because literally every contractor we've come across has 30 plus years of experience. Every single one of them. And so my question after that is that I don't deny it, but doing what? So what do I mean by that? Is that they may have 30 years of experience being a sheetrocker, right? They just became a GC 5 years ago. So they might have, so I ask them, you know, in a nicer way. Oh. So I pretty much ask them, you know, you have 30 years of experience. What did you start off doing? You know, just having a nice conversation with them. And they tell me, oh, I started off doing sheetrock. I did that my whole life, tape, flow, all that. In my head, I'm like, you're only touching the sheetrock. That's it. You know, what did you start doing? Oh, I started with tile work. I've been, you know, I did tile work my whole life. You're doing my tile work. So I always ask them that question because even though everybody's a GC, I want to know what is it that you're really good at? And typically, they're really good at that. You know, they started with sheetrock and they do amazing. They're fast, they're cheap, you know, they're good at what they do. So, yes.
So, given that,
yeah.
Is the role of the GC basically the choreographer and then get all the subs?
Usually, so a true GC has his crew, right? They have, a GC has his guys that are going to do some of the work, and then they'll sub out other jobs as well. So, you know, maybe their guys have a certain level of expertise and it needs foundation work. They may sub out the foundation work to a foundation company. So, and then you have all ranges of GCs. We go back to the same thing. Literally anybody can be called a GC. You know, anybody can be a GC. The license for it apparently is stupid easy and they give it to anybody that breathes. So, you know, it's not something that when we hire GCs, what we like to look at, which we're pretty much done hiring them, is if they're going to be doing the work themselves as well. If they're with the worker. Because if they are going to be doing it, they're going to be there every single day. If they have the guys or they coordinate the guys, they're not going to be there every day. And what happens is when they're not there every day, what happened to us in our most recent project is that he wasn't watching his guys. And the floor got installed wrong. Like one of my pet peeves is when you install flooring, I want you to go underneath the door jams, right? I want you measure the height of the floor, cut the door jamb, go underneath. Don't butt up against it because it looks terrible. There's nothing that you're going to do there. You can't put a trim piece. You can't put anything. All they do is caulk it, and it looks like crap. So that's precisely what they did. You know, and by the time I got to the property, they're already almost finishing. And I was like, I'm not paying you for this crap. Like, they need to go under the door jamb. They fixed it, not to the best of the qualities. It still looks like crap, but, you know, they fixed some of it. The tile, the same thing. Took too long. I go back and I look at the tile, and it just, like, it's, you know, wavy. The floor tile looks like crap. The grout lines are big. Some of the tiles, like, I hate when they just one sticks up above the other ones. Because, I mean, I've installed tile, and you can level that with a thin set with the thick paste that goes behind it. You know, you get a nice level, and you can go work in that so you don't have those steps. So all of that got done because he wasn't there. He wasn't watching his guys. His guys started working really slow because he wasn't there. You understand? So now we have another project where the GC is the guy working. Guy's slow, but he does great work. I mean, I'm going there. I'm like, holy crap. Hey, you're doing your job right. This is awesome.
I was like, I found one that can actually do work.
Awesome. Yeah, I was like, don't get excited. I was like, let's wait. But I was like, holy crap, you're actually doing the job that you're hired to do, and you're doing it right. This is really impressive. So that's the problem. It is. But that's what we're in right now. You know, we're in a very hot market. There's a lot of job for these people. They can really suck, and they're still turning down jobs because that's how much work is out there. So they, you know, not a lot of them are looking towards the future of building a business or building. They're just looking for that next payday, you know, whatever that looks like.
You have to be careful when you're hiring. Like, I would love if the world worked where I could hire one guy and I don't show up to the end of the job and it's done right. Yeah. Another problem you have if you hire just one contractor is now you gave that guy the ability to control your entire job. So if he put on here that ask how many projects are they currently working on now? And he's like, oh, I got like six of the projects going right now. That tells me, it's like, are you going to have the time to do my job? If one of them starts to bring you down, are you going to start going over there working on a different job? Or you start losing money on my job, or you see that you're not going to start, or you're not going to make as much as you thought, and they start going somewhere else. And if you gave him the entire job, what are you going to do? And like, now how do you go about properly firing that guy to get other people in there? So you kind of have to be careful with who it is that you hire as far as the GC goes. To where they all say they can do everything, but like John was saying, like, oh, I can do like sheetrock. I started there. Like, okay, you're going to handle the sheetrock, and then I might test you out and give you one of the other things you say you do now. But I'm going to find a guy that does tile. And asking other investors, they're like, hey, do you have a tile guy that you recommend that we use? So, I mean, we have our basic core crew of people that we like to use, but it's also every contractor has a shelf life where we had a great painter, did several jobs with us, and all of a sudden one job, it just out the door he went, and we had to get a different one. So we have our core guys that we work with because it makes it a little bit easier to say, okay, painter go in there and paint. Now let's get my tile guy in there, do tile. Now I get the flooring guy in there, do the flooring. So you have those different guys in there. But if you're doing like kitchen, it's more of like a carpenter. And usually they can do a lot of the other trades like touch-up paint, installing the cabinets, installing floors. So I might give him a little bit more of a bigger scope and kind of have him as like the general contractor, but I don't give him the entire job that way. So I have somebody there painting, and they're like children. They love to tattle on each other too. Yes. So if one's not there, one's screwing up, it goes, hey, I don't want to be that guy. But if they all want to be that guy, because I hear it from every time.
You're that guy.
they'll kind of babysit each other a little bit on that stuff. So that helps hiring a few different contractors for your basic things, is like your painters, your tile work, your electrician, your plumber, a roofer, foundation people. And then you can have your GC. I use more of like your carpentry is what it's called. It's just like doing a lot of woodwork, installing cabinets. They can install fixtures usually. They can put the flooring down. They can do the shoe molding that's been mentioned several times. And things like that, installing doors or hardware, they can do that stuff, kind of general labor or carpenter stuff. So I would be hesitant on a first project or even on a smaller one hiring somebody that says he can do everything. I would say, okay, well, you do these things. I'm going to hire a painter. I'll get the tile guy. I'll get a roofer. I'll bring those people in. To allow you to kind of manage the job a little better to make sure it actually gets done.
And then ask him for referrals. When you ask your contractor for referrals, you got to always keep in mind, always be pessimistic. Always be, you know, negative that they're bullshitting you and they're lying and all of that. Start there first and then let them win your trust, right? So they're always, when you ask for referrals, you better believe they're going to give you the best referrals. They're not going to give you the projects that went to shit, right? So I don't want their homeowner referrals. I want their investor referrals. Because then I call the investors and I ask them, hey, how did this guy do it? Oh, he did great. Okay, awesome. We got that out of the way. How did he really do it? Like, I mean, was there a communication issue? Did they take too long? Was there something that you guys just didn't click on or didn't understand each other with? You know, and once you build that kind of conversation with the investor, they'll usually let loose a little more and say, well, yeah, you know, we had a problem here. We had a problem there. And this doesn't mean that a problem means that you can't work with them. It just means that keep an eye out for that problem, right? I mean, even the contractors that we have right now that we had a lot of issues in this project doesn't mean I'm not going to use them again, right? It just means that, okay, I'm seeing, you know, where you guys are. I'm seeing where I need to be. So let's work this a little bit, because it gets to a point, seriously, where you cannot fire every contractor, right? Because then you're just not going to do any deals. So it gets to a point where you just sit down and have these conversations with them. So I've had the conversations with our GC where I'm like, and you know, you did this, like, you know, we talked about this, and I'm not trying to be a dick to you or put this on you. It's like, let's work this out. Where was the miscommunication? What happened? Is it your guys? Is it you? Well, you know, and usually it always falls on them. It's their business, right? It's the same, like, if the project gets done wrong, it's always going to fall on us. It's our business. So we take full responsibility for any mistake that happens, because it's like, all right, check. That's what we got to pay attention to next time. So with referrals, always ask for investor referrals. And the biggest thing, and we cannot stress this enough, is get help. You know, I understand you want the whole project. You want all the profit. Negotiate with somebody. Maybe bring them on as an advisory role. But if this is your first flip, get help. Get somebody that's flipped before. Because this is not something, this is not TV. Like, subway tiles everywhere is not going to make your house sell. You know, like, you got to know where to put them. You know, you got to know what to do. And having a savvy investor work with you is going to save you not just a ton of money, but it's going to set you up to be able to do more projects on your own, because they're going to walk you through this. When we partner with people, I mean, they get more than they bargained, in the sense that, like, we overshare. We show them how we even track our expenses, how we track, because, I mean, what we learn from tracking expenses is one project to the next, right? So in the next project, when we're there, we're like, all right, what were the things that we overlooked? Like, one of the biggest things is usually staging. People don't factor in staging, you know? Staging's not cheap, but it does sell the house. Like, I mean, holy crap, does it sell the house. We staged a rental, and we got $200 over market value for staging a rental. I mean, we literally pushed the values in that just by staging it. Professional pictures, lawn maintenance, you know, maintaining your lawn.
Utilities.
But maintaining your lawn is huge, especially Texas summer. That's a brown lawn. They don't look very nice, you know? So watering your lawn, getting it mowed, keeping up with the trees, those are all extra things that we went learning from one project to the next, because we're looking at the house and we never looked outside. You know, we never looked at the mailbox that's destroyed and somebody needs to change that now. Like, all of those things are The only way you're going to learn them is by tracking your projects. So you track this one, you go to the next one. All this red stuff were extras that we completely forgot about, right? So we bring them over to this one. Make sure, let's count them in. Here we have a little less, but we have some reds. Let's bring them over to the next one. You know, and you're always going to have some extra stuff here and there that you just forgot to account for, and little silly things that just got a little more expensive, or the door happened to be 28 inches for an exterior door, and those apparently happened to be custom made doors. So that delayed the project a little bit. So, I mean, those are all things that I expected my contractor to tell me. I haven't been in construction doing it myself for a while now. So I forgot anything under 32 inches, 30 inches is custom. And the exterior door was 28 inches. So he's like, oh, I need the doors next week. Okay, cool. I go buy them. They're like, no, that's going to take like 6 weeks. Damn. Like, I'm trying to finish this project now, not in 6 weeks. So, you know, I expected it. Typically, a contractor should be like, hey, this is a custom door. Make sure you order it with time. He didn't do that. I didn't know any better, and it delayed the project, right? So, I mean, it's just things that, again, don't assume, you know. Get people that know. Ask for help. We've asked for help for people from investors that they've helped us out for free, like, hey, in this house, or even he's become our speed dial number is Tim.
Oh.
Last name?
Alums.
Alums. So Tim Alums.
A lot of people have him on here.
He's a very smart guy. And as a realtor, he has a lot of experience with what you should be doing, how the finished product should look, what's going to sell. So there's so many times that we just call him, hey, so we have this. How big of a deal is it? Like, oh, that's pretty bad. They're not going to like it. Oh, crap. Okay, let's go change it. So, I mean, use your resources. It's definitely going to just save you a ton of money, you know.
Now, the next part is you have your right contract, you have your scope of work, and you guys are working together. How do you protect yourself? Because everybody here is of you supply the workplace and you supply the materials, and the contractor goes, hurts himself, can he sue you? Or saying, oh, workman's comp, it was on your job, he was your employee, kind of things. And several things that we kind of do to make that barrier. And like he was saying, you try to do every project right by the book and cross every T, dot every I, it's going to be very hard to be successful, because it's going to take a lot of time, a lot of extra money to do those things and do it perfectly right every time. So some of the things that we do when we talk about contracts, each contractor has an independent subcontractor agreement. You can just Google that term and look through the different ones and find some stuff. Ask just an attorney.
We have a copy of it?
Or we have a copy of the one we use on our website. You click on the How to Hire a Contractor. You can see what we use. It's a basic two-page document. Right at the top it says independent subcontractor. You do not work for me. You're working on your own basis. And then in there, it'll say how you're going to get paid, when you're going to get paid, basic things of like, this is who I am, this is who you are, this is the property address, you're going to start this time, you're going to try to have it done by this time. Makes it kind of hard. We already discussed about the delay penalties. You can try to work those in there. We haven't really found a successful way to work that into anything yet. But we do reference the scope of work, because there's a section there that says the work to be completed. You can put in there, it's like see scope of work, and then the exhibit A, and you attach that to the contract, and then each of you initial that page or something like that. So those are kind of the meat of it. And then there's a lot of things in here that's saying that if you work on the project and you hurt yourself, that you can work for us, you work for yourself. So that's a big thing you can have signed that you're going to want to have, and nobody hopes to ever use it. But it's one extra thing that you have there that if you were to get sued and just be like, it says right there, independent subcontractor agreement, this is the job, this is the work that he's asked to provide, and it helps protect you and it helps protect them.
Just a quick question. I was told, and I want to know if this is correct or not, I was told that if I purchase the materials needed myself, and then give it to the contractor to use, then that means that he is now my employee.
I've,
but if I get him to purchase materials and I refund him for it, then that still keeps him as an independent contractor.
And, well, that's just like it.
That's something that's confusing
for our it's technically, still, yes.
Yeah. But it makes it kind of hard because a lot of these guys don't have two wooden nickels rubbed together. And then it's like, it's also like, I have a project that's like 20 minutes away. And you go buy it, and I'll wait, I'll get reimbursed you. He's like, well, where's my money? It makes it very difficult to complete the job. But I've also read some of the things of when is the employee and not an employee in some of the like, terms that they ask. Like, did you require them to be there at 8 a.m. and leave at 5 p.m.? Did they feel like if they left the job for 2 hours, were you going to fire them from the job? Were you controlling their work schedule? Were you providing the workplaces? There's a lot of things that you can do. Or should that be the right way to do to make it easier for you to defend yourself? Yes, but that doesn't work a lot of times. So having an independent subcontractor agreement and saying like, I didn't tell you you had to be there on a Saturday. You went there on yourself. I didn't tell you you had to be there at 9. You showed up at noon. That's fine. I was like, you take 3 hour long lunch breaks. As long as my job gets done when I want it done, that's fine. So I've read it from that angle as well. But just saying like, you provided the work, did you feel like you needed, you were going to lose your job? And if you show it's like, I never told him he had to be there. That makes it back in your favor that you worked for yourself. So
is that something that, if they don't have the funds to purchase any materials or anything, and I do
tell me
for myself, is that something I could put in the contract and say I would purchase materials for you
to
use?
We usually don't.
One way that you can go about it, if they don't have the funds, you can tell them, go to Home Depot, pick up what you need, go to the pro desk, have them call you,
yeah,
and you can pay for it.
Yep.
One way.
Yeah,
I've
done that several ways too, cause especially when it comes to plumbing knickknacks at the end of the job. It's like, I don't know what you're going to need. You're going to need a faucet, you're going to need a P-trap, you're going to need a 6-inch piece of this, you're going to need a different size, like little nipple that goes for the faucet on the top. Like, I don't know what all that stuff
and,
is.
And
like,
don't be surprised if the contractor charges you for doing that. Because, I mean, keep in mind that if they got to go to Home Depot to buy materials that supposedly you said you were going to provide, it's killing an hour of their day at least. You know, they got to make the trip out there. They got to find the stuff, go pay for it, get back to work, pick up momentum again. So, I mean, don't be surprised if they charge you for that because it's a trip fee for them, you know? And it's like, I just lost an hour because you didn't bring me the materials I needed. So it's something that not many do charge you, but if they do, I'm not going to get upset because it's like, yeah, that was my fault, and I killed an hour of your time now. You know, that's an hour that you're losing money.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's something to, as far as that goes, you know, be considerate of both sides. And then another thing on here is release of liens. So,
yes.
Do you require them to show you proof of insurance?
So, no. We don't. It goes back to the same thing that we said, like, can you cross every T and dot every I? Yeah, you can. But there's a lot of workers that we have that I don't even care if they have a social. Like, I mean, you know, like, I just need the job done. So you got to kind of weigh your risk reward on those things. Like, if it's a bigger project and all of that, and there's a lot more risk and they're going to take on a lot more work, then yes, I want to make sure you're insured. I want to make sure that if anything happens, you're protected, that I'm protected, and all of that. But if we're talking about $1,000 job or something quick, we're not going to go through all the, you know, formalities because a lot of the people, I mean, he can't even speak to most of our workers because they speak Spanish. So, you know, I'm not going to be picky with them because I know that most of them, they know how to do the job. That's it, you know, and that's just what it is. So. Yes.
I've heard stories that you show proof of insurance.
Yes.
And clothing.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
there's nothing to do with it, but it looks official and they're scanning them.
Of course.
And they are producing what you asked for, but they're scanning
And you can spend the time to, when they give you the proof of insurance, for you to call the insurance company, make sure they're insured. I mean, and you can go through the whole procedure. It's just, do you want to?
Yeah. I get roofers and I ask. And the ones that only put 3 nails on the shingles and don't want to tell you what kind of surgery or shingles they're going to use, they don't have insurance, they go away. And you don't want to let them go away after a repair to get your money and their shingles are flying away.
Yeah.
And I do ask, and they will drop everything and get you your name on that insurance. You don't ask them, you feel sorry to ask them.
And a roof, I mean, you're sometimes talking about $5,000, $6,000. You know, you're talking about a good amount of money on your roof. So same with foundation, AC, electrical. I mean, those are all things that you want to make sure you're hiring people that, you know, that can handle the job.
Can you make sure that they, one, pull the proper permits and stuff?
On certain things. So
you have to have one for electricity.
Yes.
You have to have one for plumbing.
No.
Yes, technically,
you're supposed to have. There's a lot of things. Like, if you're moving, building a new fence, they want you to have a permit for it.
Yes.
If you're like a homeowner just like doing a basic remodel, they want you to have a permit for it. But there's a lot of things you can get away with not pulling. The stuff that I want pulled is things that I don't know. Like, electrical, big thing. You're pulling permits if you're opening up any kind of panel, doing any type of wiring, because I don't know electrical. The codes change constantly. Yeah. Like, guys that want to say they're electricians switching wires and stuff, that doesn't happen. So, like, big things, like, I don't know. Like, they're supposed to be permit pulled for everything. But permits cost time and they cost money. Roofers know that. Foundation guys know that. Everyone knows that those things slow down the job a little bit. So, a roofer, usually they can get the whole job done in a day. The chances of the city guy driving by at that time and feel like stopping and looking for a permit are pretty slim. So, no, I don't get a permit for roof.
Yeah.
Foundation, kind of similar thing. Unless I'm like, one of our projects right now is down on Denver Heights, right next to the Alamo Dome. You betcha, they're driving up and down that street every day looking for people that don't have permits. So everything's got a permit on that one. So it's a risk-reward kind of situation. So, but if you do get smacked with a penalty and not pulling a permit, you got to pay it. But, I mean, we've done a lot of foundation work, roof work, that permits weren't pulled, and it got done just fine, and it moved right
along.
So,
as far as the shingles flying off and all of that, you kind of protect yourself by hiring people that come with a better reputation, that come recommended, that, you know, they have a more established business. Peter? That told us that, he's like, ask them how old their phone number is.
Yeah. That was a good one.
Yeah,
it makes sense too. As you said it, I was like, "Huh, I never thought."
And
of
like,
that.
If it's a new number, it's like they keep changing their business or something happens. So ask them how old their number is. So I mean, that was, you know, there's ways that you can kind of protect yourself. And we go back to the same thing. Like, flipping houses is not for the faint of heart, right? There's a lot of risk involved in this, and in a hot market like we're in. There's a lot of deals that we do are very marginal, right? We just do a lot of them to make money. And if we nitpick every single deal, I mean, forget about it. We're not going to be doing many deals, you know, because it's going to take forever to get them done, to get all the permitting, to get all the things, to get all the contracts, you know, to do everything by the book. We'll just might as well just not do it, you know. So a lot of them, they're quick. Let's get in. Let's get out. Are we taking a risk? Yes. What is the chances of that risk really hurting you? Sometimes very small, you know, if you kind of hedge yourself by verifying these people beforehand.
We were talking about release agreements.
Oh,
yes.
I guess I never mentioned that. Every time we pay somebody, we get a release of lien as well. Basically, that protects you, saying that they are saying right there, they're signing that you paid them an amount and they are waiving the right to lien your house. So if you get in a squander with your contractor at the end of a job and he tries to slap a $10,000 lien on your house, you can go back to the county and be like, here's our contract for $10,000. Here's a release of lien for $8,000. Like, he's entitled to $2,000. And so those are things that you want and hope never have to use. But if you do happen to need to use it, you're going to be glad they're there. So every time we pay a contractor, we get a release link for that amount. And then also write on there the total amount that we paid them to date with the job and us. And it says that you're saying you have paid all your guys. You paid for all your material. If it's in there, like everything has been paid down from him, if it's a general contractor kind of situation. But every time we write a check, they're signing a release of lien with that check.
And every check over $600, you need to get a W-9. So, because at the end of the year, you got to do taxes. And you got to send them a 1099. So you need W-9. The best way to get them, because we've dealt with some people that are kind of, you know, iffy if they're going to be in business that long. So what we do is, before we pay them, that first check, before we hand them, sign the W-9, sign the release of lien, sign that, here's your check. Right? So they're not going to get a check from us until they sign those
things. It's even better to do it like when you're signing that subcontractor agreement as well, before you even get to the point of pay, because if they don't have it and they've done the work, and then now you're really in an odd situation where they have to pay them, or if you don't want to pay them, like then now they're going to be pissed that you didn't pay them, and it becomes a risk on your end. If you do happen to pay them and you get audited for the IRS or something like that, they're going to ask for those documents, and if you don't have them, you're going to end up having to pay taxes on the money that you claimed for going towards a job. So W-9s, release liens, independent subcontractor agreements, all of those things.
Then the delay of penalties is what we talked about before. You know, you can try to put it in there, but
that's something that goes towards like they're an employee, like an employee signed W-2s, W-9s. So you have it saying like, hey, this whole thing was set up as like as an independent subcontractor. As an employee, and you just hope that, like, usually most guys, like, they want to sue you. They're going to have to hire an attorney that's going to try to have to, they usually want retainers. And a lot of times if they say, okay, what makes you think you have a case? They say, well, I signed this contractor agreement, let me see it. And they look at it and they're like, eh, it's going to be a pretty hard case. I'll fight it, but you're going to have to pay me first because there's a chance I might lose. So having those things in place and handling the job that way works, because then it's a, I can see yourself getting in trouble handling big jobs with contractors that actually have money and have the resources to sue. A lot of the guys in the smaller real estate space don't have savvy in financing like that to go after people. So.
How much penalty do you like for
a
contractor that sounds reasonable?
We don't. Like, haven't ever written in the contract the penalty if they're going over time. We just had to really try to discuss with them, like, hey, this is where we need to be. And if they go over by a large margin, we'll just never use them again. So that's kind of...
Can you consider putting in rewards, like if you're done by this date? Then...
I've heard some people have done that successfully. We've never done it, so I can't really talk about it. But I have heard some people say, hey, if you get this stuff done by this, we'll give you an extra... this many dollars. And I've just never really seen where in our business how that would work out.
That whole concept annoys the crap out of me, because it's like, here, let me reward you for doing the job that I'm already paying you for. Like, well, that's just really frustrating.
It incentivizes them to do really fast work. And if you go back to them and say, hey, that's not how I wanted it done, and you make them go back and do it, it's like, well, now I want my reward because you made me go back and do it. Well, you did it wrong. So... it makes it some friction, some potential problems to go with that. It's like a lot of things of rewards and penalties that happens when you're like $1 million projects and stuff, where you had some sophisticated people, engineers, architects, lawyers, contracts this thick attached with them. So that's where you'll start to see a lot of that. You can try to do little things like that. Usually it's, hey, if you get this done by Friday and it's done right, bring a case of beer here on Friday. That's usually
and it doesn't hurt for you to show up on a Friday, an occasion with, you know, especially if it's hot outside, show up with some, I don't know, Gatorades or something. Like, don't give them beer during the workday. You know, you want them to finish the job.
Yeah, you give them beer, they'll be going.
Maybe at the end of the workday on a Friday, bring some beers or something and just kind of make them, you know, that warm feeling that you care about them, so they kind of hopefully go above and beyond. I mean, I've tried to give it a contractor a bottle of scotch, and apparently that didn't work. So, you know, yeah. So, I mean, those are things that, you know, keep in mind. I mean, any questions, anything like that we didn't cover? When we buy a house?
Right, as far as what we have.
So it really, like, that was one thing that I was going to mention. Our email's on here. If you guys send us an email reminder, we're actually putting a scope of work right now for a project that we're doing. So what I'm going to do is, once we put that scope of work together, I will send you a copy so you guys kind of have that breakdown. So at least you can kind of compare. But let's say on this house, we have to demo kind of like...
Clean it out first.
Yeah, first we got to clean it out. They left literally everything in the house. So once you clear everything out, we got to demo the back addition patio conversion thing that they did. That's not even attached to the property, so it's going to cost more to fix it than to just demo it. So once we do that, it's going to expose a lot of what we need to get done regarding that. Then we start from the floor up, right? So we do foundation, then maybe we'll just jump to the roof if the roof really needs the job done, so because you don't want any leaks while you're fixing the house. And then you kind of just start working your way into the major stuff. Then you do your demo work. You want to demo the whole interior, floors, cabinets, bathrooms, you know, because all of those are going to be dumpster fees and, you know, day laborers and all of that. So you want to get that out the way. Once you have a nice clean slate, that's when you start kind of going back. So you go back in. First thing that we like to do is kind of just paint everything, because everything is open, it's easier for them. So they paint everything and they know they got to come back at the end to do touch-ups. So paint everything. Windows, if you're replacing windows, do those first because you might have sheetrock damage. Doors, if you're replacing the whole door jams and stuff like that, do those first. Same thing.
Basically, like, foundation, obviously, first. Get that done. Get your plumbing done. Get all of that stuff sealed up. The electrical, like, depends how far you're going with the job. And you just want to realize, like, work it. I don't say work it backwards. But yeah, obviously foundation first, exterior stuff, get all that done. If you're replacing electrical, you're doing extensive work, you're taking kitchens out, you're making moving walls, you're putting new doors in, get all that stuff put back in there first. So it's called just like your like carpentry stuff. Build your walls back, get your doors installed, get anything that they're gonna be pulling sheetrock that's gonna cause damage, talk about the windows. The doors,
AC vents,
get all that stuff kind of tightened up, and then you clear the job out, let the painters get in there and paint all the walls so he doesn't have to keep kind of jumping back and forth. And once you got everything painted, then you come back and say, all right, let's get a tile guy in there, because the tile is usually going underneath all the cabinets. They're going on the walls and stuff too, so you can go in there and you can put the walls in the showers, you can put the walls on the floors. Then you would kind of come back and start putting your finish outs in. Then you see like all your cabinets and all your vanities. Then you can go back and then go to like a granite. Then you start putting your fixtures and stuff back on and buttoned up. You got to think about what kind of work are they going to be doing. If they're going to be slinging hammers everywhere and slapping mud on the stuff, you don't want a lot of finished stuff laying around. You don't want to have your cabinets installed when your electrician's installing can lights. He's going to step on that countertop. Even though you tell him not to, he's going to do it. They're like, guarantee it. And so you kind of see like how much work is involved and what are they going to be smashing up around here. And then let's work it back from there. Like, don't go install the floors before you got all your paint done, because you're going to have paint all over your floors. So flooring is usually one of the last things that we install in any house, because it's the easiest thing to damage. And you're just trying to be very, very careful, because you can tell them not to do it. You can put the paper down, you can put padding down, and somebody scratches that thing in the middle of the floor, you're just, oh God.
Yeah, laminate flooring or carpeting, I mean, those are pretty much like the last thing you want installed.
Yeah, you know, so like cabinets, we wait till the last. Granite, we wait till the last. The finish outs, the prettiest things people see, we keep to the last. The first thing you got to do is you got to get your house level, because that's going to mess with all your sheetrock and everything. got to level the house, get it watertight, make sure the plumbing is sealed, sewer is running right, and then you start going in and just kind of think like, okay, my painter's going to be in here painting, and then I got to have somebody come in here, moving a bunch of doors through here, he's probably going to hit that wall, he's going to leave scuff marks everywhere and stuff. Painters know they got to come back and do some light touch-ups, but if he comes back in and almost has to paint the entire house again, he's going to get kind of mad. So you got to think of it that way, is how much work's going to be done around these areas as you go through your job.
And one thing through a project, state over and over to your contractors, keep the job site clean, right? Keep the exterior clean. You have neighbors, you're in a neighborhood. Don't leave pizza boxes and big gulps hanging around the yard. Like, you know, keep the property clean. Don't piss off your neighbors, because that's something that they start calling the city on you, right? So you don't want that. You don't want to bring unwanted attention to your job. So it's definitely something that, you know, tell and state that over and over, because a lot of times, like, we have a problem that, oh, I'm cleaning up after your AC guy. This is some BS. I shouldn't be doing that. And it's true. They shouldn't be doing that, right? Or you're cleaning up after the tile guy. Or everybody needs to clean up after themselves. So state that. Like, if they're going to come do a job, okay, you're going to do that, and you're going to take your garbage with you. Don't leave it in the garage, right? There's times that we do have a dumpster there that we tell them, like, all your garbage, leave it there. We're going to have a dumpster. Don't worry about it. We're not going to, because maybe it's not big enough of a job that we don't need a dumpster. Take your crap with you, right? Like, it's your garbage, you created it, take it with you, budget that into your bid, whatever you need to do, but take the garbage with you. So it's another little thing that is always overlooked. Anything else? Yes.
Who's better, you responsible as the owner of property for OSHA?
OSHA, you gotta have at least like 7 employees. So there's a minimum, and if you're just kind of a 1-2 kind of guy, a lot of stuff you don't have to worry about OSHA on a small scale. It's like, I don't remember what the minimum is, but you have to have a minimum certain number of employees before you have to start complying with OSHA. Most of our subs and contractors don't have more than 7 or 11 guys or whatever it is. It's a number that's kind of up there, and a lot of the people we use, like, they don't have that number of employees because we're not on projects large enough that those we need a contractor that can have that, usually has that kind of manpower and employees.
So do you guys make sure everything is safe?
Not so much. I mean, because in the construction industry, like, ego is a big thing, and yeah, and a lot of them are like older men. They're very manly. They don't want to. I don't need eye protection and stuff like that. It's like, you're at your own risk on that, and we are too. But it's also, you require them to wear hard hats, safety belts, gloves, and all this other stuff. Nobody's going to want to work on your job. So it's the kind of risk reward kind of thing. So a large scale construction, OSHA is a huge deal. The safety is a very big thing for them because it does cost a lot of money. But there's a lot more money, a lot more sophistication, a lot more attorneys, lawyers in that business, to where our down on our end, it's not.
And like we said, you know, in a perfect world, you'll do all these things, but in today's market, you just got to take those risks sometimes, you know, and we say it's a risk because it is, but it's not that big of a risk. It's not something like, I mean, we've done a lot of projects already, and, you know, to this day, we haven't had an issue, you know, because we try to mitigate it as much as possible without having to jump through all those hoops, because it's going to make it harder to hire people and to keep people and to get prices that you want and all of that.
Do you talk to the neighbors?
So, actually, yeah. So what we like to do too is talk to the neighbors for leads. So I use the excuse of the construction and say, hey, we're going to be working here. If you have any problems, give me a call. By the way, you know, if you're ever curious, we could give you a free evaluation on your property just for being a great neighbor. You know, we'll tell you what the houses here are going for. If they tell you yes, chances are they're interested in selling. So you know.
It's always friendly to go. If you're going to be making mess and kind of having there, especially during the demo phase, the foundation phase, the roof phase, like there's going to be a lot of noise, a lot of sound, a lot of kind of garbage being created. So we kind of tell them, like, hey, next, we're going to be renovating this house next door. We'll try to keep it down, try to keep it clean. If you have a problem, please get a hold of us, let us know. But just kind of let them know. And most times they're very susceptible and appreciative of doing that.
And they're great at snooping. So if you tell them, hey, you know, if you happen to see anything weird or anything, feel free to give me a call. They'll snitch on anybody that's there. I mean, they'll watch your property better than any alarm system. So it's good to kind of, you know, get them on your side. And again, this one property that we have, two of our neighbors are kind of helping us try to find a buyer for our house. I mean, we're not even done, but they're like, yeah, I think I have some friends that are going to be interested, this and that. Let me get them. I'm like, awesome. You know, so if I can get it sold before I can put it on the market, that's great for me. So.
I have a question. I want to go back to when you said that you did the W-9 sign. So this is when you're the general contractor yourself, you're just hired off the subs.
So when you pay anybody.
$600
and above, you need a W-9.
You're going to send a
1099 because we're paying them from our company. And so anytime even a long guy, it's like I'm going to pay him throughout the course of the year, I'm going to pay him more than $600. And since I have a company and I am paying that cost, I get to deduct that amount because it goes into like a cost of goods sold. It's something that I paid to get something done so I can make money off of it. So since I took that deduction, somebody else made income. So they want those things. So like an individual person, we can't write 1099 and say, oh, I paid somebody to mow my lawn, now I can take that off my taxes. It's like, you're not using that as a business format. He needs to claim that on his own taxes because you've got no deduction. But you want that because if you get audited and they say, hey, you wrote $10,000 to ABC Lawn Service, like where's the 1099 and the W-9 form for that? If you can't produce it, the likelihood that they might come back to you because he never claimed that money and had nothing to do with you. He claimed zero income. And they're going to say, well, nobody claimed that as income. That's going on you, and they want taxes off of you now. So that's why you get the W-9s and send the 1099s out at the end of the year. And you need to have an accountant do it. I mean, there's a whole process of how they're done. But
so y'all have software, you have an accountant?
We have an accountant that does it. Like, when it comes to the accounting side, I like finance, I like numbers, but accounting.
We have a bookkeeper that keeps the books.
Yeah.
It helps a lot.
The $600 is just the labor part, or labor and material together.
Whatever you pay somebody, if they're providing you, like if I'm paying my painter and he's providing the material or he's just doing, doesn't matter. If I'm paying him more than $600,
because his books, he should be deducting all the paint that he took. So he would have receipts for all of that stuff. It's just basically, they just want a paper trail of where the money came. Like, I paid him $10,000. They want to say, okay, you paid $10,000. You claim that on your income now. And then you said, now you bought $5,000 in paint. Okay, well, now that $5,000 went to this company. Now they can chase all that money down. So that's what they want.
But like, for instance, in case of the roof, because it's insurance deductible, so I claim my roof is insurance payment. It's not like I can buy it off. Are we talking about your personal home or a home you're rehabbing? Both. A home you're rehabbing, you want to be able to claim all that money.
Yeah, because the insurance company sent you the money, so now they can see that that payment went to you. Now, that money needs a trail to the contractor. So even though it was, unless the insurance company paid the contractor specifically, if it was made out to him and never flowed through you, you don't got to worry about it. But if the money went into your account to his account, you want to have that paper trail that shows that.
Any money that comes out of your pocket, your account, and goes into somebody else's, and it's more than $600, that'll be nice. Anything else? Anybody? Just on the contact form to kind of give you a little breakdown of all the stuff there. The Investor's Digest is kind of an email that we send out monthly. It has a market update. That's the one that John gives. We just film one We do a little walkthrough. It's a 10-minute walkthrough that he does with all the slides. You'll get a copy of the slides. We put updates of what's happening in the real estate market, what we're seeing, news, other stuff in that email that goes out. And that's our email. Then we also have a podcast that we share everything that we're doing. I mean, I have one on there that it's how we hire contractors. It's like 40 minutes of it. We have one more detailed on scope of work that went step by step, interior, exterior, and lessons we learned, challenges we've had. So, I mean, it's a good little, it's just nonstop data. And now tomorrow we're going to probably sit down with some scotch and put one together on leans and how to overcome lean issues with properties and stuff like that. So definitely check it out. I think it's a great resource. It's all information. And then social media, you get to see all the stuff that we go through. I mean, we document pretty much every property we go into, and it's just, it's been fun process. So definitely check them out. And feel free at any time to ask any questions. Just shoot us an email. We're here to help.
So you said you're doing a scope of work for the scope of work tomorrow?
No, that one already did. It's already on the.
So you just want us to email you?
No, she's talking about the one. Oh, the work. We haven't done that yet. It's
going to be sometime this week that we're going to be putting that scope of work together.
Okay. So you want us to just email?
Yeah, just shoot us an email just as a reminder. Okay. And that way, then I'll just email you right back. Once we have the scope of work put together, we'll show you everything that we're doing to the property. And maybe we can actually break it down by priority, what we're doing first, second, third. So we'll put that together and send it out to everybody. So it may take us more than a week because it takes us, this project is like an $80,000 rehab. So it's going to be a very detailed scope of work. So it's going to take us some time to put it together. But as soon as we do, we'll send it out to everybody.
Okay, any last minute and quick questions?
The one that you're about to start on, could we look at?
Once we get it cleared out, because it's an estate, and they literally left everything. So, and they were...
Yeah, are you
going to
take pictures before and after?
Oh,
yeah. We do that with every one of our projects.
Yep.
Before and afters, for sure. But you can't, like, it's just, it's kind of a hazard even walk through right now. But yeah, I mean, we'll see if we can work something out once we get the project actually, like, in a position where
you
can actually walk
through. Yeah, definitely. That's why following our social media, you're going to see we'll be posting pictures. And like this one, it will probably get to a point where we're going to post that we're having a free yard sale. So everybody can come by and kind of like just haul stuff off that they want to keep because they literally left everything behind. So there's a lot of stuff in there. And to us, we're not going to spend the time to try to sell it. So it's either in the garbage or somebody can use it. So somebody can use it. Yeah. So definitely reach out to us somehow. Give us your, because we don't have your information. So reach out to us. And that way we have it. And as soon as we go through all these steps, you know, we'll go sending you guys updates and all the information.
I would offer that if you want, send it to me. I have everybody's email address.
Perfect.
Rather than you getting, you know, 25 requests.
Yeah.
That'll work. And then I can forward you the everybody's email address so that you'll have it.
Yeah.
That you won't have to respond individually.
Yeah, and again, we're very reachable. We like helping out. That's why we're here. That's why we do what we do. So don't hesitate to ask for help. Seriously, like, this doesn't have to be that hard. You know, it only gets hard when you try to do it by yourself.
And another thing too is, like, if we don't get back to you, I tell people all the time, like, it's not that we're trying to ignore you or anything. Don't
try,
feel bad.
Try again.
Like, if I don't get back in a few days, email again. Because, like, email fills up, you get busy, you don't get back, things get lost track. So, I mean, it's constant contact if we don't get back to you. We'll get back to you. It's not like trying to ignore in any form or fashion. Because, like, somebody will call and leave a voicemail. You never return my voicemail. Like, I never return anybody's voicemail. I was like, send an email or a text or something. Because then I can basically read the text, but not all of it. No, I need to go back and get to it. But a voicemail, I listen to it once, and the bubble's gone. And who knows what I listen to.
Definitely. One thing that would help is if you guys have any topics you would like me to do a podcast on, definitely from marketing to negotiating deals to contracts to rentals. I mean, we've done pretty much every deal, everything out there. So
I'd like to know how you acquired this home.
The one that we're getting now? So that property came to us through Peter. He announced it at the Alamo. And as soon as he said that, he's like, "Oh, I'll finance it." I'm like, "Oh." So we were there the next day in the morning. And by that afternoon, I don't know, it wasn't even lunchtime. We were already, partnering with him. We're like, "Well, if you're willing to finance it, you know, why not partner with us? We'll bring the money for the rehab and handle it. You brought the deal and you paid for it." So we did that. We just structured a partnership. He's like, "Hell yeah, I'm in." So there we are. That's how, we got that.
Yeah, partnering is a huge source of leads for us a lot of times now. So I mean, we have some residual marketing stuff kind of going on, but a lot of stuff this year is in the past just been.
And the other one that we've had some of the issues with the contractor, that one came from a neighbor that we kept talking throughout the whole project, really nice guy. And then he was like, my nephew around the corner lives in Dallas, but he has this house here and it's just falling apart. He doesn't know what to do. He doesn't want to talk to a realtor because he doesn't want to waste time. I was like, "Oh, tell him to give me a call." I'm the only one talking to him. He came down one day, saw the house, got it under contract, sold it, went back to Dallas. So how do we get deals? Every which way possible. We're always out there, we're not afraid of door knock or, just so many different strategies. And, partnering has just been, that's why I tell people, don't be afraid to partner. 50% of something is better than 100% of nothing. So just partner, you'll learn, you'll get some money, and you just keep it moving.
Thank you.
Thank you.